The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
World Cup Football Daily, Sunday night, and Messi has the Maracanã rocking eventually in narrow win over Bosnia-Herzegovina. Elsewhere in Group E, the remarkable Swiss timing as Otmar Hitzfeld's side win game in the 93rd minute, and France win amid Honduras fouling so bad even Jonathan Pearce thought they'd cross the line. After that, we'll be looking forward to Group G. Iran-Nigeria, neither side has won a World Cup game since 1998. There's the US grudge match with Ghana and Germany-Portugal. Messi's turned up. Can Cristiano? Day four on the World Cup Football Daily Pod, and it's James Horncastle still here.
Hey.
Still here, James.
Yep.
Still.
Got my pod fever on.
I've got my coconut on. And we've got our Jacob Steinberg on.
Hello.
All right, Jacob. Dublin dilettante. The pod has sounded understandably tired and low-key so far. Producer Ben should do what Bill Friedkin did on the set of The Exorcist and just randomly fire off revolvers and shotguns to keep everyone on their toes. Do you know what, Dublin dilettante? It's the travelling. It's all the travelling. The sweaty jungle in Manaus. Now, the cool breeze of an Atlantic night here at Postanovi.
Cicadas keeping me up. Cicadas.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ants.
Yeah. In my bed.
In your bed. Cool. Hey, at least there's some absolutely remarkable and sparkling football to lift us up, Jacob. Take, for example, if you will, Argentina-Bosnia-Herzegovina. Reasonably interesting and entertaining 2-1 win in the end, but it was almost one of the worst games we've seen at this tournament.
Well, yeah, Mark Lawrenson didn't particularly enjoy it on the biggest. He spent the entire first half complaining about being forced to watch a football match in the Maracanã. I really felt for him, actually. I don't know if we can start some kind of fund to get him back to England, because, you know, he sounded quite aggrieved.
It's funny, because it's almost exactly what we were saying about him 4 years ago, and yeah. 4 years before that. Speaking of 8 years ago, though, Leo Messi scored another World Cup goal. That's extraordinary.
Although,
eight
did he?
Years and 623 minutes after his first World Cup goal, he gets his second.
That might be an own goal.
You think they're going to give that as an own
they
goal?
They might do. I think it looked like it might. I couldn't. It's really hard to tell on that first shot when it's in real time, but then when you watch it back, it seems like it was going wide. But that doesn't take away from what was a superb run from Messi, who had done very little before then. Even I know he had the free kick that led to the own goal after 3 minutes, but beyond that, it was a pretty underwhelming performance from him. And you looking at him, he was quite sluggish, slow, struggling to get away from his man. And I think a minute before he scored, he put a free kick miles over the bar. The crowd were whistling, and then suddenly that moment of magic happened and cheered everyone up.
The great thing about that was how Messi made one Bosnian defender tackle the other one who was pursuing him. Just
genius stuff.
Genius.
It's like a Jackie Chan movie or something, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yeah.
If you had to compare it to a George Lucas film, perhaps, was there anything that comes to mind?
Some special effects going on there, that was for sure. But so, What happened that Argentina livened up in that second half?
Well, he made Sabella made a huge mistake, I think, by playing five at the back and three midfield. And I think you look at that midfield and Javier Mascherano, who's not really played in midfield for his club for about 3 years now, Maxi Rodriguez and Di Maria, who did very little throughout the 90 minutes. And Rodriguez was taken off at half time. They changed it up and brought in Higuain and Gago to move to four at the back and two up front with Messi behind, so he just had that bit more space. And it was a 1-2 with Higuain, and I think Sabella, he's had a little bit of credit for recognising he made a mistake with the initial selection and changing it. At the same time, you probably want to not be making that mistake in the first place, and
ideally,
maybe against a Bosnia played very well, I think, and the more composed side, but against a better team you could be out of the game by the point at which he's
making indeed,
that
had it not been for that colossal Kolasinac own goal at the start, which is a remarkable own goal, He was probably almost the last person in the stadium to know about it. Had it not been for that, even with Messi's wonder strike or the own goal later on, Argentina would only have drawn. So given that they came into this match as many people's out-and-out favourites to be finalists at the very least, do you think people are going to be reconsidering just how good they are?
Perhaps. I mean, it was a disappointing display from them, but as Jacob was saying, Sabella kind of recognised that he'd made the mistake, and he went back to what qualified them in the first place, playing something akin to a 4-3-3, and I think that's the way to get the best out of this Argentina side and to get the best out of Messi. I mean, there's a lot of kind of conspiracy theorising as to why he changed overnight to this 5-3-2.
What theories?
Well, yeah, the classic sort of Messi wanted to play only with Aguero rather than with Aguero and Higuain, or yeah, there was some falling outs in the dressing room. None of it confirmed, but I think Sabella had left it open to interpretation by saying, I can't tell you why I'm changing to this system. But perhaps by making that mistake...
Do you remember how Messi used to be seen as the good one, the nice kid?
Yeah.
And, you know, after Pepsigate or whatever, when he was tormenting poor Pep Guardiola by flaunting his Coke cans in front of him, people are beginning to evolve a different kind of... a different image of him.
He's seen off lots of strikers, hasn't he? Yes, Barcelona, isn't he, yeah. If you think about that.
Not many can see off Ibra, can they?
No, but he has.
Yeah.
And Villa as well.
Yep.
So, I assume he does have a
steely side.
A steely side, yeah.
Really? I wasn't sure about him overall. I think that although it was a fantastic goal and it was a great run, he still had a lot of problems trying to get away from players, and they crowded him out quite easily, partly because of the way the system they played, but that spark that he had about a year ago before the hamstring injury started to pile up, it still wasn't there.
And Aguero was quiet as well.
Aguero was quiet. Well,
Di Maria,
both Manchester City strikers on the pitch were quiet. Dzeko probably didn't have a great game either, yeah. up the other end. But yeah, Aguero, again, I think there was a point in which he was one-on-one with a defender and didn't really fancy taking him on one-on-one, trying to beat him. He shot early and went wide late on. It was quite, but at the same time, you don't want to peak too early.
No, or maybe they'll warm up. Yeah. It's just funny because Argentina came into this as the most ridiculously high-powered forward line possible, and the big question mark was with Bosnia was at the back because they supposedly didn't have any full-backs and etc. And so on. So it was surprising to see them not piling on.
It's
the
not
goals.
A perfect team though throughout the side. It's not like it's not like the Spain team at the best where you couldn't find a weakness, and especially in midfield. If you're playing Maxi Rodriguez in midfield, I think that certain teams in the competition would fancy themselves.
Oh, interesting. Well, anyway, that was the final game on Sunday. Before that, there were two very interesting matches, interesting in different ways. The remarkable finish in the Switzerland-Ecuador match, and then the controversy of France and Euros. Controversy in three ways, really. One, there were no anthems at the start. Now, we like an anthem here. Fortunately, we'd actually played out both of these in the yesterday's pub, but they couldn't get the stadium sound system working.
No, shocking.
Right. Okay. And then there was, Jonathan Pearce's kind of Graham Poole's three yellow cards moment.
It's supposed to be a flawless system.
Right. Oh, goodness me, they've changed their minds now. Which replay are we supposed to believe?
I think it was flawless. It just wasn't Jonathan Pearce-proof, that system.
Right.
But...
You have to feel for him because he's made such a buffoon of himself to the entire... And usually he's a pretty good commentator, but yeah, that's all he's going to be known for now.
Right.
It was astonishing they played it again, the commentary, when they showed the replay during the
half-time. But they didn't play all of it because it went on for about 5 minutes with him basically seizing on this as definitive proof of the uselessness of the goal line technology. Basically, this was the English... I believe other nations might have had similar confusion in their commentary.
Apparently there was, yeah. But happily, though, Richard Keys thought it wasn't a goal initially and said the technology, it doesn't work, and then came back about 20 minutes later with a foolproof angle.
Do you have his tweets there?
Not on mine.
They were quite choice. I mean, they were deliciously Keys-esque. One of them was, at no time ever is that in. And then he comes back 20 minutes later with it. Got us another angle.
Newsflash.
He managed to, he sorted that out for us.
He's the best thing about this World Cup.
He's one of the many delights. Anyway, so that was English commentary getting a little bit confused over the whole goal line technology thing. The other controversial aspect of this match was Honduras' tactics. Not a huge surprise this after seeing their friendly with England, but absolutely savage.
Honduran hard knocks, wasn't it? I thought it was quite rich from their coach. He's taken to task on this in the pre-match press conference, and he said, look, we haven't had a red card in 16 games. Well, one was coming, and it came in that first half from Wilson Palacios. I mean, the assertion that they play by the rules, I don't know what rules they play by, really, because it's we've already had so many casualties in this World Cup or in the build-up to this World Cup. And the way they play, they just seem to take no prisoners, don't they?
Well, indeed.
I thought Pogba, to be honest, I don't think he reacted too badly to what were quite savage sort of raking down both ankles.
And kicking him on the floor as well. He should have been off for that,
yeah.
Palacios. And the referee didn't protect the France players. A lot of those challenges were basically, you know, leg breakers, career-threatening injury tackles that they were lucky not to, that there weren't any injuries in that game.
Yeah. It was remarkable how the French players didn't react. I mean, with the exception of Pogba, who could have been sanctioned more heavily, but wasn't. But with the exception of that, they were remarkably constrained.
I didn't think that Pogba deserved to go to be sent off. I don't think he really did much, to be honest. I think
he kicked out twice at Palacios. Well, Palacios had earned it, and you could certainly take the boy out of Stoke.
Pogba could have done a lot more. I really don't think he did much.
No,
I
mean, all right.
People were sort of saying he lashed out. I don't know. I didn't really see it. I could be wrong. But comparing it to Beckham in 98.
But Honduras as a whole, that was one of the dirtiest performances you've seen in a World Cup since.
Well, they offer so little. I mean, they don't seem to want to do anything other than kick and hack people to pieces. I mean,
well, they like stamping as well. Don't forget stamping.
Yeah. But, I mean, they barely threatened. They barely got out of their half. You can say, look, yeah, this is a small country. They don't have great resources. They don't have... they have to make do with what they've got. But at the same time, it's just... It's brutal, kind of, how they go about, you know, getting results in this. I don't think they're even trying to get a result. I mean, apart from to maybe sneak a point, but...
Mm. Well, anyway, France got a big win. Benzema got two...
It's remarkable, really. I mean, considering back in October he was going through this almighty drought of 1,222 minutes, and now he's got 8 goals since then. I mean, this was his first World Cup appearance because he missed out in 2010 because Dominic didn't pick him. And I think he's many people's sort of favourite because of this group to probably win the Golden Boot. I was impressed by France because I thought, because of the way that Honduras were playing, sort of two banks of four, very sort of intense, just it was quite hard to break them down. And yes, all their goals came after they had a man advantage. But before that, they hit the woodwork a couple of times. I thought Valbuena and Griezmann were really, really promising. And yeah, they're bringing that momentum that they had in the warm-up games and, well, the playoff game into the World Cup. The next game against Switzerland should be interesting.
Right, well, Switzerland also victorious in their opening match, although only at the last minute, after it looked like Ecuador were indeed about to snatch an injury-time winner themselves. Who was it? Arroyo?
Yeah, and Barami tackled him, wasn't it?
Yeah, the ball comes into him. It's about the 92nd minute.
Yeah.
And it's all set up for him, isn't it?
The perfect goal when he should have just put his foot through it, but he didn't, and Barami broke. And actually, the referee made up for... Well, the officials... He made up for the linesman, to be fair, by playing the advantage for Barami, because it was another really bad decision for the goal that Switzerland... Dermich scored at 1-1. They're kind of just making up as they go along with that decision and the one in the Mexico-Cameroon game. So we've had three good goals disallowed for offside incorrectly so far. But he played an advantage, which allowed them to...
So Barami does the tackle, then he runs upfield, he gets knocked over, but he gets straight back up again and keeps running.
Yeah. Out to the guy on the left, and good goal.
I mean, the guy on the left had a great game, that Ricardo Rodriguez. I mean, he was the guy who delivered the ball in for the first goal. So he ended it with, what, two assists. I think he's one of the players to watch in this tournament. think he plays for Wolfsburg, right. But certainly one of the, you know, most promising sort of left backs if anyone's interested.
Mm. Remember the name, yeah. The guy on the left,
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah. Until then, it was heading for a draw, but that goal means we've still not had a draw in this World Cup, and I think that is the deepest we've gone into a tournament, certainly in the post-war era. I think maybe the last time it was this far into a tournament without a draw was 1990, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, which was 7 games, and so what we've had, 10 games now, I think. Mm.
Brilliant.
5th team to come back from behind as well and win.
Well, yeah, Archie Rintour. Yeah. Tweeted 5 of 9 games, team conceded in first, because it's 10 now, because it's 9 games since, but came back to win. It only happens 3 times in the entire 2010 tournament.
It's such a contrast to the last World Cup. It's just teams are just going for it and attacking. Apart from Honduras, they haven't really bought into the spirit of this free-flowing World Cup. But I'm not sure what the ratio of goals is. It's something like, what is it, 3.36 goals a game or something, which is good fun. And I think it's partly because there are more sort of great defenders in the studios now than there are probably playing. It's hard to think of too many world-class centre-backs playing now. So. Mm. You know, makes you maybe think with Argentina, they have the best attack, probably, and might suit them.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Brazil's defence, which what is the most expensive assemble, that two centre-backs of Luiz and Thiago Silva, and you know, Luiz is a liability, and Thiago Silva, I don't personally think has been at sort of his Milan standards for a while. I still think he's probably shades it, but yeah, he's got an error in him as well.
Really?
Well, I mean, not... No, I mean, of the, as Jacob was saying, I think, the centre backs that sort of we grew up with in the '90s, 2000s were outstanding. You know, generally sort of historic names. Whereas now you do have, you know, across the line. I mean, in terms of full backs and centre backs, it's quite a slim pickings in terms of, you know, who you would put in sort of a pantheon of great defenders.
Like Piqué and Ramos for Spain. Now they're having to actually do some defending. It turns out they can't.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. John Terry, of course, didn't he? Retired from the thing. Yeah. I'm not being entirely ironic about that, because
he is one of the best around at the moment. One of the best defenders isn't even here as well. Miranda.
I mean, you look at the Italian defence. So, I mean that they went into this tournament with that as a perceived weakness rather than a strength, in comparison with other years. And even last night, I thought someone like Paletta was really poor. You know, it could have cost them.
Right, Galdino stole my Volvo. Posting, do you think Paletta would look better if he became Gabriel Pilato, which means bald, basically? And I think the answer is yes. But it's already significantly better. I don't know if you saw him, Gaudini stole my Volvo, during the season, but he was rocking that hairdo, but longer. And it was wrong in many, many ways. So
a lot of bad haircuts in the France team as well.
Thank you, Jacob. Yeah. But you're right.
Yeah. Don't know what they're thinking of.
Well, all right. Oh, there was one other game, actually, since last we spoke, and it was that... strangely timed Ivory Coast Japan match, which James, you and I were listening to a little bit of this on the radio. I don't know if you were across the extraordinary turn of events when Japan's victory turned into defeat, thanks to the arrival of one Didier Drogba.
Yeah, I was watching this game with a few mates after the, and we were kind of watching it, and I think I got in a taxi home at about 70 minutes, but yeah, Japan played well in the first half, took a deserved lead, and then 60 minutes, I think it was something like the 61st minute, Drogba came on. By the 65th, Ivory Coast were winning.
Yep.
He's still an incredible player, the impact that he has on teams.
He didn't directly contribute, but suddenly
the feeling, you could just feel that something's going to happen now, Drogba's on. And so it did.
Right.
Welcome Football Daily with James Richardson.
Lots of games coming up on Monday, Jacob. I've got Iran, Nigeria,
the big one.
Ghana, USA, also the big one, Germany, Portugal. What do you want to start with?
Iran, Nigeria.
Yeah, I do too. I'm really interested in this match because, I mean, you USA, Ghana, I'm excited by as well. And we'll talk about that very shortly. Paolo Bandini, who's in Natal actually for the game, getting rained on. He says it's been very rainy there, and of course Germany, Portugal's. the big marquee fixture. But there's something very intriguing about this clash of continents, Iran-Nigeria.
Yeah. Because Iran's kit shrinks, doesn't it? That's been one of the issues in their preparation. And the boots that they've got are too small. Basically, they're going to turn up in maybe things that look like tank tops and stuff, perhaps, if it's gone down in the wash. But, their preparations haven't been ideal because of the sort of US and EU embargoes on Iran. They can't really attract big names to come and play them for friendlies in Tehran. So if you look at the caliber of the opposition they've kind of warmed up against, it's not up to the standard of who they will face in this group.
Right. In the last four friendlies, they faced Trinidad and Tobago, who they beat, and they drew against Angola, Montenegro, and Belarus. Super Eagles, meanwhile, failed to win any of their last four warm-up matches. They were up against USA, Scotland, and Greece. So I don't know what we can make of that.
I remember seeing them play in the Confederations Cup last year.
Who's this?
Nigeria.
Oh, yeah.
And against Spain, and they lost the game 3-0, but they were quite unlucky to lose 3-0. They were good going forward, skillful, quick, and once again, I'm fascinated to see how John Obi Mikel plays for Nigeria in this
advanced
creative role that is apparently his forte. Mm.
Well, that was the case when he was a kid, wasn't it? When United signed him and then Chelsea took him, he was meant to be this superb number 10. But Jose changed all that.
Well, it's packed with Premier League talent. You've also got, of course, Sir Victor Moses and Odemwingie. And Vincent Enyama out of Ligue 1. So all sorts of excitements there. And Iran, I have to say, I don't know quite so much about, except that they've got that Charlton Athletic player.
Gucci.
There you go.
Yeah.
Reza Gucciana Jazz, who Producer Pete is not a fan of, being a Charlton Athletic supporter himself. But perhaps he will flourish in the conditions there in Curitiba in the way that so many have at this tournament so far.
He's shrunken top.
Yeah, very much so. Are you going to hazard a forecast for this, or if not, we'll just move on?
I think Iran might shock and might win.
Based on what?
Nothing.
You just want to be controversial. Yeah. Okay. Oh, we can't move on before mentioning Omar, who says, hey, the episode, Jimbo, where you discussed Iran having to fast during Ramadan, it is allowed to not do so, apparently. So that's good news for them, if they make it through to the knockout stages, of course. And he also says, you are allowed to not do so if you are travelling. Sorry, beg your pardon, that was in a subsequent tweet. So that's basically it's anyone who's travelling, you're allowed to not do so. And meanwhile, the commentator who people think is Barry Glendening on BeIN Sports is actually Hafiz Daraji. So apparently, if you were confused thinking Barry was commentating for BeIN Sports, the Hafiz sounds exactly like Barry would do if he was commentating on BeIN Sports. I want to actually tune in to Hafiz. I don't know if we could get some sound of him commentating for... That's something we'll try and do that for tomorrow. Get some Hafiz Daraji and...
You could just have... It means that Baz doesn't have to do these late nights. Just have him record, this guy record it.
Absolutely. And, great. All right. Ghana-USA then. Ghana-USA. Let's speak to Paolo Bandini.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm very well. More to the point, how are you in Natal?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm safely sheltered from the rain we've had coming down pretty constantly over the last, certainly since I've been here. I understand it's been going since Friday. So, yes, I'm doing well.
Right, OK. Well, quite the game for you coming up, this Ghana-USA grudge match. As you're all too aware, Ghana have ended USA's World Cup chances in the last two tournaments. I imagine have become, as a result, something of a bogey team for them, have they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of it's been said in some of the American reports coming to this game that USA are more used to playing Ghana at the end of their tournament. Well, I mean, unfortunately, USA, in effect, if they don't get a good result against Ghana, it could be the end of their tournament. I'm sure that they'll still have Portugal and Germany to play, but it's a hugely important game for them. It's a hugely important game for Ghana as well, for the same reason. And actually, I think people are going to forget that Ghana are theoretically the underdogs in this game. They're ranked 37th in the world rankings, whereas USA are up in 13th. But it's a huge game for both teams, and I think the fact that there's this added revenge element going into the USA has certainly added a little spice to it, even though the players are all insisting it doesn't.
Absolutely. The team, the big news coming into this was the fact that Landon Donovan wasn't going. Who would you pick out from the squad to make the difference against Ghana?
Well, I think it's, you know, obviously a lot of it is going to come down to how well they can contain Asamoah Gyan, and I think that obviously a big part of that is going to be the centre-backs, and I believe that Matt Beazer, and I'm not just saying this because I had the opportunity to interview him before the tournament, he's been really impressive for Sporting Kansas City and Major League Soccer over the last couple of years. He's a player who kind of come out of nowhere, but wasn't necessarily on everyone's radar 12 months ago. It was when he got his first cap for the national team in 2013, and he had his breakout season as the defender of the year in Major League Soccer. And, you know, there's always going to be this question at the moment. We're still not at a point where Major League Soccer is necessarily due as being on a par with European leagues, and people are going to be uncertain about how a player who's never played outside of his home country, like Beazer has, how he's going to do against some of the best players in the world. But I honestly think, from what I've seen of him, that he's up to it. And I know there are Premier League teams who are interested in signing him last summer, which is something he turned down. So I really think that's going to be a fascinating thing for me to see. He's up against some great players in this group and see whether or not he's up to it.
Right. Well, there's some other big names in there as well. Michael Bradley, who did great things at Roma. Clint Dempsey, of course. Jose Altidore, let's not forget. What's the expectations back home with that lineup of how well they should do in this tournament?
It's always fun with Americans. Americans are never short of enthusiasm. And, of course, it's something I've been talking about with some of the fans out here is when Jürgen Klinsmann said they couldn't win the tournament, which I think most people deep down are realistic enough to know that they can't. Nevertheless, there was this instinctive reaction in America of, hey, you can't say that. You know, we want to go into every tournament believing we can win. And I don't think any of the players are upset by it. I don't think it's hit them in that way. But I do think that the American attitude going into any tournament is, you know, hey, we're going to go in and we're going to try and win and we're going to believe we can win until you prove us otherwise. But I do think that there's an awareness that the chances of them going through in this tournament lean very heavily on this match against Ghana. And so there's a lot of pressure on it.
Enjoy yourself there in the town. Look forward to catching up with you further down the line in this, Group G. Fantastic.
Sounds good. See you later.
Paolo Bandini there. In Natal, lucky chap. Defeat is unthinkable, isn't it, really?
Well, for both sides. But, well, you know, this is another apparent group of death. But you look at the state of Portugal with the worries over Ronaldo, and you know they've been underwhelming at times, certainly in qualifying. They needed to go through the playoffs in Germany with the number of injuries they're carrying. You do think that there's definitely a chance for both of these sides. And I think probably in December when they got the when the draw was made, they were probably making, you know, their officials probably making Greg Dyke style, you know, slit throat gestures and thinking that, but you come to it now and why not, you know,
why not.
USA are always quite awkward to play against, aren't they, and Ghana 4 years ago were very impressive, and I know it's 4 years on, 4 years a long time, but I think that there's definitely a huge chance for both these sides to spring a surprise maybe.
Well, Germany, confusion reigns a little bit as to the extent of their injury worries. Royce obviously out for the tournament. Schweinsteiger got airlifted for a checkup today, possibly on his foot or knee. I've heard different versions of that. But it should be all right for their game against Portugal. So, more or less, full strength.
Well, the sense is that they will play four centre-backs across the defence with Boateng, Mertesacker, Hummels and Hauedes. And Lahm will be playing in midfield alongside Khedira. And yeah, Lahm's been carrying an ankle injury, Khedira as well, obviously only recently returned from a long-term knee injury. So yeah, those sort of issues, I mean, before every tournament there are sort of concerns about the German defence. They tend to do okay in the end. And then you look at what in forward positions. I mean, when they last met Portugal, I think in the Euros, it was a game that was decided by Mario Gomez. Gomez won't be there, of course, and you know, they've only got one sort of recognised striker in mid 30s, Miroslav Klose. So yeah, it's I don't think I'm not too confident about Germany. I don't think they'll park the bus, but I think they're probably quite limited in what they can go about doing.
Really?
A lot of people have been tipping them as potential winners, you know, say Brazil, Argentina, and then Germany. But the amount of injuries they do have, and the worries over form and so on, it does make you a little bit uneasy about them. But also, I'm not sure if I buy it, because I don't know if they're sort of lulling people into this kind of false sense. Well, it's kind of happened in the last few World Cups, where there was all this doom and gloom from the German side of it, and then suddenly, oh look, they're in the final.
Yeah. And well, they were actually in the semi-final.
Well, you know, but say 2002, for example.
Yeah, no, where, but the point is valid still.
Yeah, yeah. And there's still a huge amount of talent in the side. Mm. And if this is going to be some sort of free-wiggling, free-scoring World Cup, then again, that could play to their advantage, because they're not particularly good at the back, but they, when they get into their stride going forward, they're a force to be reckoned with.
Right. Whereas Portugal have poor old Ronaldo strapping ice to his knee. And they have to be concerned about his fitness for this game?
Yeah, well, the last time we saw him play, obviously, was the Champions League final, and he clearly wasn't fit in that game either. When was the last time he really did look fit? I don't think he didn't play in the Copa del Rey final, did he? And missed a lot of games towards the end of the season for Madrid. So it's a huge shame if he is coming into this with not 100%, but it seems like he's going to play tomorrow, this evening. So
he certainly shone for them in the playoff with Sweden, but that was a while ago.
Yeah, there was an "I miss you Zlatan" banner at the France.
It was a what?
"I miss you Zlatan."
Oh, banner. That's nice.
You'd think. It's been a great World Cup on its own, but it would have had something extra with that if Zlatan were here too. I think, in terms of,
Portugal were very good at the Euros last time, when there was not much expectation about
them. Were they very good?
They got to the semi-final.
Beaten by Spain.
Against Holland, they were great. And Ronaldo, the thing is, Ronaldo battered Holland that night, but if he was in that kind of form, then I would be tempted to tip them to beat Germany tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think, you look at all the other sort of big name, big stars in the tournament so far, they've all kind of started really well. You know, you think of Neymar, well, at least got on the score sheet, at least. Neymar, Messi, and Benzema, and so on. So I don't think that'll add any pressure on Ronaldo, because I doubt he'll feel it, but to some extent, when people will be watching,
he's not the kind of guy who really pays attention to what other players are doing and tries to in any way match their achievements.
No, not at all.
No. All right, well, it's a tough call. There's an ultimate tournament team against the world's best player, basically. You're edging towards Germany, though, are you?
I'm not sure. I think if Ronaldo is fit and firing, then I think that Portugal have a great chance of winning that game. But is he, though?
Is he?
I think it'll be a draw.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first draw in this World Cup. Interesting. Well, we'll be finding out then as Monday unfolds. And then Monday night, Tuesday morning, we'll be back with another update here from Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Do join us for that then. In the meantime, many, many thanks to guest producer Pete, to James Horncastle and Jacob Steinberg. And have a lovely Monday.